their number 217-352-9992. You can order online at jetspizza.com. Disability Beat is also sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana, with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
My name is Ann Russell from the National Alliance on Mental Illness. You are listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Samara Howell, filmmaker and actor in a soon-to-be-released movie called Avowed. But first, disability news for the week of November 14th, 2016. Advocates are keeping tight-lipped in the wake of Donald Trump's surprise victory, with little known about how the president-elect may shape policies vital to people with disabilities. Notoriously short on specifics, Trump barely touched on disability issues on the campaign trail. However, now that he has won the White House and Republicans have control of both houses of Congress, many disability advocates are scrambling to grasp what's ahead. According to Jennifer Laszlo Murahi, president of Respectability, quote, "I don't want to pretend this is not a crisis, because the fact is that President Obama and Hillary Clinton had very strong ties with the disability community and had very clear plans for the disability community. Mr. Trump will have the opportunity now to engage with lots of people, and hopefully this will become an important issue," end quote. Health care could be the biggest ticket item for people with disabilities as Trump takes office, according to Ms. Rahi. Republicans have pledged to repeal the Affordable Care Act, a law that currently bars insurers from excluding those with pre-existing conditions. Meanwhile, advocates are worried about Trump's proposal to convert Medicaid to a block grant system, which would limit federal funding for the program and transfer significant control to the states. Trump has also raised alarm bells with comments as recently as last year linking autism and vaccines, a theory widely discredited by the medical community. And video of Trump appearing to mock a reporter with a disability played prominently in attack ads during the campaign. Said Ari Neiman, president of the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, quote, "One of the challenges here is that the Trump campaign was not very specific about disability policy plans, and those areas that they were specific about concern us," end quote. Nonetheless, Neiman indicated that disability issues have always been bipartisan, and advocates have a long history of working together to protect special education and other critical programs. He said, quote, "There's a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, but a lot of resolve to fight to protect the laws and programs that disabled people depend on to survive," end quote. Transportation is an all-important piece of the puzzle for people with developmental disabilities looking to access the community, yet new research shows that options remain limited. In a review of 99 Medicaid waiver programs serving people with autism or other developmental disabilities across the country in 2013, a new study finds that most offer transportation services, but such rides were often only available for specific purposes like getting to and from work. Overall, 58 of the waivers reviewed provided transportation services, and 71 included rides within other offerings like supported employment, residential, or day services, according to findings published in the December issue of the Journal of Disability Policy Studies. Meanwhile, 13 of the waivers offered no assistance in getting from one place to the other. Those with developmental disabilities face a host of barriers accessing public transportation, researchers said, meaning that rides provided through Medicaid waivers are often the only options for this population, short of depending on friends and family. Moreover, they said many with disabilities simply lack the training to take public buses or trains, and concerns about safety and stigma are often at play. Nonetheless, non-emergency medical transportation is the only type of ride that Medicaid programs must offer, the researchers noted. The authors wrote, quote, transportation is a critical need for all people with disabilities, although transportation for services like supported employment and residential habilitation is very important, transportation for community purposes is crucial for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to have equal access to opportunities, end quote. After improving significantly, the unemployment rate for Americans with disabilities is ticking back up as more people look to join the workforce. Numbers released late last week from the U.S. Department of Labor indicate that the jobless rate for people with disabilities rose to 9.9% last month. That's up from 8.7% reported the month prior. The rise came as fewer people with disabilities were employed, but more sought to join the labor force. Meanwhile, the unemployment rate for the general population dipped just slightly to 4.9% last month as the economy added 161,000 jobs. Federal officials began tracking employment among people with disabilities in October 2008. There is not yet enough data compiled to establish seasonal trends among this population, so statistics for this group are not seasonally adjusted. Data on people with disabilities covers those over the age of 16 who do not live in institutions. The first employment report specific to this population was made available in February of 2009. Now reports are released monthly. And finally, the number of characters with disabilities on primetime television is on the rise, with a new report finding such representation nearly doubled since last year. Among series regulars appearing this season on scripted primetime programs on ABC, CBS, The CW, Fox, and NBC, 15 are expected to have disabilities. By contrast, there were just 8 portrayals of disability on network shows last season. The findings come from an analysis released this month by GLAAD, a media advocacy organization for the gay and lesbian community. The annual report assesses representation of minority groups on television, including people with disabilities. For the 2016-17 season, the report found that characters with disabilities account for 1.7% of all series regulars on network shows, the highest percentage recorded since GLAAD started tracking disability representation on TV in 2010. GLAAD included any condition that would qualify under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Jennifer Laszlo Mizrahi, president of the nonprofit Respectability, said in the report, quote, as noteworthy as these numbers are in comparison with previously tracked seasons, they lack far behind the actual representation of people with disabilities found in our communities nationwide. The only way to create authenticity within entertainment television is if characters with obvious and hidden disabilities are included within every script and storyline, just as they are found within the diversity of our everyday lived experience, end quote. And that's the news for this week. An interview with Samara Howell will come up next, so stay tuned. Do my very best in your life. You are listening to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today by Samara Howell, who is a filmmaker and actor in a movie that will be released in 2017, early, I assume, and very much applies to the topic that we just discussed in the news about people with disabilities being featured in film. So welcome to the program, Samara.
Thank you, Vicki. Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself first and how you got involved in filmmaking as a whole, but also in this particular film, which really features heavily a person with a disability, and the storyline revolves around that person as well, correct?
Yes, that's right.
So tell us about yourself.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a born actress. I've never wanted to do anything else, and I've been lucky enough to come of age in a generation that really encourages performers to make their own content. You know, being a millennial and coming up as YouTube has been emerging, has really, and with the availability of technology, has really encouraged people such as myself to not just be an actor, but also be a filmmaker. And I applied for a filmmaking fellowship this summer with Taliesin Nexus. And they, in their application, asked for you to write a treatment. A treatment is a short version of a film about liberty in some form. And I knew what they meant. I totally understood that they meant, like, civil liberties, and they were looking for something that was more political in nature. But I was just completely inspired with this image that struck me as I was contemplating what I was going to put forth. And I just woke up one morning with this image of a nun cradling a patient who had a disability so severe that he wasn't really aware that he was being helped. And I just, it just struck me so much, that idea of, you know, loving someone who isn't aware of it. And what does that mean? And what, how does that work? You know, how is there a back and forth that way? And so that's what got me started, on the film. And then my writing partner, Chris Gebhardt, and I, we took a disability studies course at UCLA this summer to make sure that we really not only knew what we were talking about, from the perspective of that patient and everything, but also that we were serving the disability community as well as we could, and really taking into account what they wanted to see in a film.
So what did you learn from the class that applied to the film that you made?
Oh, gosh, we learned so many things. I think, honestly, to be honest with you, what applied most to the film that we made, more so than the class, was we took an afternoon to go to a place called Epiphany Care, which is a long-term care facility for patients similar to Robin, our character in our film, where, you know, there's severe cognitive disabilities, and they're living their entire lives in these facilities. And some of the patients literally aren't aware if their nurse comes in or out of the room, or if they're being changed or anything like that. And to talk to the nurses who work there was, for us, for the film that we were making, where we really took away the most about how it can be such a frustrating experience to, you know, try to be caring for someone who doesn't know and, you know, might be fighting you without realizing that they're fighting you, and the kind of emotional toll that takes. And that just helped us know that we were telling an honest story, and that we weren't, you know, making things seem nicer or easier than they are. And we really just wanted to kind of honor everyone who's involved side of that story. So that was super helpful to be able to really interact with nurses and patients who are in the same situation as our story.
So give the listeners a little synopsis of what the film is about. Don't give away the ending. We want people to, you know, see it, but, and, you know, enjoy it. So, you know, what can you tell us?
Absolutely. So Sister Giles is a young nun-to-be. She hasn't taken final vows yet. So there's still time for her to change her mind about becoming a nun. And she is what's called a novice nun, and in that year, many convents give their novices a task that is meant to challenge them. And she is assigned to care for Robin, a man in his 40s who's lived his entire life in a long-term care facility and has such a severe cognitive chromosomal disorder that he is incapable of communicating at all, and indeed isn't really that aware that she's in the room. Sister Giles never met anyone with any kind of cognitive disability before, let alone someone as severe as Robin, and is just totally thrown and doesn't know what to make of it. And as time goes on, and she starts to see not only how some of the nurses at the facility treat Robin, but also just interact with him, she starts to have some horrible, deep-seated doubts within herself, kind of wondering if maybe God made a mistake, and just is very troubled by this. And the film's really about how much she's projecting her own feelings onto Robin instead of just accepting Robin for who he really is, and how all of her problems are coming out of the fact that she's just genuinely not seeing the person in front of her.
Hmm. So the person who plays the individual with the chromosomal disorder, he actually does have a disability?
Yes, he has cerebral palsy. His name is Brian Dilbeck. He's a wonderful actor. Your listeners have seen him in Dumb and Dumber 2 and The X-Files.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a pilot, and I've forgotten the name of the pilot. A pilot is a TV show that they make the first episode of that may or may not turn into a full series. And it was several years ago, and I believe it was also a Farrelly Brothers comedy. And it was all about people with disabilities living together in community. I don't know what the name of it is. But anyway, that unfortunately didn't get picked up at the time. But, you know, who knows, it's happened again. Anyway, Brian is awesome. And, yeah, he plays Robin. He plays our patient.
And so what is the overall message that you took this course, the disability studies course at UCLA, and and so I'm sure you have a fairly good sense of some of the messages that the disability community is, you know, trying to promote for people who are in that community. What is the one overriding theme that you think applies well to the film that you've made?
I think the theme that most strongly is what we were doing with the film is to see people for who they really are. And that theme is applicable not only to Robin, because Sister Giles is projecting onto him because he's disabled, but also to nuns in general, because I assume that a lot of viewers are going to come in with stereotypes about nuns, and then they're going to see this character whose faith is in conflict and, you know, doesn't know what to do, doesn't have all the answers, and I think that will sort of challenge them to see nuns differently as well, because that's not exactly a community that you see too much of in the world.
That's true.
So it's absolutely about, you know, not having assumptions about people, but just accepting them for who and how they are.
And so what are the next steps? This actually hasn't opened anywhere yet, right? What is the future for this film?
Well, the future for this film is currently the festival market. So we're hoping to attract followers on our Seed and Spark. By the way, the name of the film is Avowed. I feel like I have not yet said that, and probably people are wondering.
I think I said it at the beginning, but you can't say it too much because, you want people to remember it.
Absolutely, Avowed. So we're building our follower and our audience base right now, which helps festivals know that people will come see it when it screens. We've had interest from some major festivals, including the Los Angeles Film Festival, who have asked us to submit our film, which is just a great sign.
That's great.
It is. It really is. I think that we're really lucky in that we inadvertently made a film that's sort of a cross-section of three communities, in that it's a feminist film because the characters are nuns. So it's all women except for our patient.
Mm-hmm.
It has faith elements, so then there's that community as well. And then obviously it touches the disabilities community. So we've inadvertently made a film that kind of talks about a lot of things that most films don't, and festivals seem to be really eager to have this story in their docket. So that's great.
Well, you know, based on the last news story that I read about, you know, the direction that the, you know, TV networks are going and having more and more people with actual disabilities who are starring in roles on TV, I think that the market is ripe, really, for something of this nature.
I sure hope so.
Yeah. So you say this is a short film. So how long is it, and how do you manage to get all of that done in a short time? Because that's quite a bit of communication going on there.
I know. That was a struggle. We wrote the script. We started the script in March, and we were still rewriting the script in August, and we shot in September. So we spent a lot of time making sure that it was the clearest version of the story that it possibly could be. It's very silent. There's a lot of things that are communicated not through words, but by actions.
Mm-hmm.
especially like Sister Giles' point of view about things. As her point of view changes, there are certain actions that she does differently. Like, so we repeat actions a lot, and you see a change in how she does that action to indicate a change in feeling.
Mm-hmm.
There's one clear conversation between her and her mother superior at toward the end of the film that kind of clarifies a lot and sort of synthesizes what's happened. And to answer your first question, it's going to be approximately 15 minutes long, and so we're really getting a lot into a 15-minute short film.
Yeah.
We didn't focus on anything extraneous, I think, is how we kept it so tight.
Yeah. Yeah, so you hope a festival, and then what will happen to it after that?
Well, I'm positive it will absolutely play at some festivals. I'm just hoping for the biggest of the big. But after that, we will absolutely make it available on the internet once it's done, unless we sell it to a distributor such as Shorts HD.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe Shorts HD screens through on like Roku and devices like that people have plugged directly into their television, but they also have a website.
Mm-hmm.
So and failing either of those, it will be available on Seed and Spark, which is where we would like people to follow. You can follow at Avowed Film on Seed and Spark. So you'd go to www.seedandspark.com, search for Avowed, and then follow us, and that way you'll get updates about where we screen, what festivals we're at, and eventually it will be available on Seed and Spark's website directly.
And I'm thinking you probably also have a Facebook page for it, Twitter account maybe, regular website?
We have facebook.com/avowedfilm.
Mm-hmm.
And then people can follow my Twitter. It's at Samara Howell. That's summer like the season, A like the first letter of the alphabet, and Howell like people on Gilligan's Island. And I tweet about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And... yes, and then our film's website is not so much for the public at this point as it is as we're navigating its festival thing. But people, I would recommend mostly following on our Facebook and Twitter. And once we get our website ready, more for the public and less for the film industry,
mm-hmm.
we'll let people know about that as well.
Now, have you graduated from UCLA yet, or are you still an undergrad?
I did graduate.
You did graduate. So are you going into filmmaking as a profession? And if so, are you going to be following this up with other films in a similar vein, possibly?
I certainly am thinking about it. Not being in the film industry. I'm absolutely going to be in the film industry. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's what I'm doing. I shot a show for MTV this week as an actor. And I was on American Horror Story last season as an actor. So acting is more for the paycheck, and filmmaking is more for the love of it.
Mm-hmm.
And my writing partner, Chris, and I are discussing a possible feature sort of in the vein of Zero Dark Thirty about a series of murders that happened. It's a true story where all of the victims were developmentally disabled children. And so we're looking into possibly developing that into a feature and seeing where that goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it certainly will be an interesting life for you and an amazing way to start. And the insight that you, I'm sure, have gained from working on this film must be incredible.
It's so humbling and absolutely beautiful. I can't tell you how much it means to me to have people on social media contact me and thank me for casting Brian. And I'm so humbled by that because there's no reality in which I would have ever cast someone who didn't have a disability to play that role. So just the fact that there's so much gratitude around it is really, really humbling. We have a responsibility as artists, and I fully intend to, you know, fulfill that responsibility to the people whose stories I tell.
Well, that's wonderful. Can you give the contact information one more time, the website, Facebook, the Twitter information, so that people can look it up and be in touch and follow the work that you're doing?
I absolutely can. So you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/avowedfilm. And then you can find us on Seed and Spark at www.seedandspark.com/fund/avowed-movie. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Samara Howell, SumeraHowell. You can also find me on Instagram the same way.
Great. Thank you so much for joining me, Samara. You were a great sport. We talked before the show, and I thought I was going to have to wait until December to have you on the program, but the opportunity arose, and you just stepped right in. So I thank you, and I also thank Vince Staskel, who hooked us up and made this happen. So I know you're listening, Vince. Thanks to you very much as well, and thanks for joining me on the program today. Good luck with your film.
Absolutely, Vicki. Thank you so much.
All right. This Bye. And other episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas for guests or topics to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Hope you have a great week.
Okay, well, here we are. Transient sounds, not people. On the issues, everybody's just passing through. Isn't that the truth? Analyzing the 2016 elections? Well, the last one was What's Next, and it was about discussion. We have Joe Manarek and Scott Bidner. They work with the Illinois Inclusivity Project that does a lot of different things. They have discussions on hot-button issues, trying to get people to talk to each other over the civil discourse, over how do they put it? I have a picture of the poster here somewhere. And they indeed work with students. And this was an unexpected Friday form. And also, I got the good audio at the very last minute. So I'm only presenting maybe 24 minutes and then a couple of interventions, including my own. I guess as far as struggling with this, I should. And then I thought, since I